Aretha Franklin died in Detroit today. She was 76. She was known as the Queen of Soul, but she was also a gifted pop singer, gospel singer, R&B singer, and even opera singer. We miss her already, and on this episode, we're going to talk about the inimitable, unforgettable, indelible Aretha Franklin and the utter abundance of music she left us. Don't go away.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Joining me here in the studio is NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Linda.
And also with us is All Things Considered host Audie Cornish. Hi, Audie.
Hey there.
So to be totally transparent, we decided to do something that we haven't ever done before. We are recording this conversation the evening of Tuesday, August 14th. As sometimes happens in these situations, we were afraid that we would have trouble pulling this conversation together, depending on, you know, when the news of her passing might reach us. So because our schedules are complicated, we went ahead and we decided we would talk about her legacy when we heard that she was gravely ill, so we would make sure that we had a chance to remember her. The first thing I want to ask both of you, and I'll start with Stephen, is what is the first thing you think of when you think of Aretha Franklin?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it is really difficult to overstate just how incredibly important she was across the entire history of popular music. I guess the first thing I think of is just the incredible combination of the versatility of her voice with the unmistakability of her voice. Mm-hmm. She sang in so many genres, in so many ways, sometimes with an incredible sense of reverence, sometimes with an incredible sense of playfulness, sometimes with an incredible sense of sensuality. All of which sounded unmistakably exactly like her. There are so few singers who are able to conjure up that instant combination of gravitas and playfulness. Mm-hmm. I can't overstate what an incredibly important figure she was in music and beyond.
Yeah. How about you, Audie? What's the first thing you think of?
I think for me, the word diva comes to mind. I think that that term is so overused now. It's a little bit like iconic. I hear a lot of things being called iconic,
sure.
And I hear a lot of people being called divas, and the terms don't apply in any of those cases today. It actually applies to Aretha Franklin because she has a regal bearing. When she enters a room, people like stand up and applaud, you know, like if she makes demands about like the air conditioning or whether it's like, you know, her using a bus, not a plane or whatever it is. People were like, yes, okay,
yeah,
we will do that.
Absolutely.
At one point when they called her the Queen of Soul, I think she was actually crowned in a performance.
Uh-huh. I would believe that.
And like, I'm pretty sure the state of Michigan said her voice was like a resource, like a resource of the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me fits the term icon.
Yeah.
And also diva, like somebody who brings like regality to what she's doing and somebody who is unapologetic about how good they are. That's where my head is at right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the interesting thing, when we started to make notes about this remembrance, we all talked about one thing in common, all of us, which was that she was such a wonderful interpreter of songs. Because I think there's a sense currently, and maybe there has been for a long time, that kind of the pinnacle is to write your own songs,
right,
which I think has a tendency to understate the significance of being a musician, a vocalist in this case, who can, as Stephen was talking about, in a variety of kinds of music, can reinterpret a song in a way that is exactly like her. And
right,
the one, you know, the one that comes to mind for me, of course, is Natural Woman, which was co-written by Carole King. And there's a version of it that Carole King sings, and it works as a Carole King song. But it's completely different from what you get when it's an Aretha Franklin song. Before
she was indeed an amazing interpreter. She also did write some of her songs. She co-wrote Think, mm-hmm. which is one of her most iconic songs. She also had a way of very, very smartly retooling other people's compositions. If you can name one song to signify Aretha Franklin's incredible career, Respect is one of the greatest songs of the
Of the greatest recordings ever.
Yeah, one of the greatest.
Say.
Yeah. And that is an Otis Redding composition. And Otis Redding performed the song. Let's hear a little bit of how Otis Redding sang this song.
Hey, little girl, you are sweet as a honey. And I'm about to give you all of my money. But all I want you to do is just give it, give it respect when I come home.
Give me respect when I come home. Now let's hear how Aretha Franklin sings it. Let the record show that Linda was mouthing along with the words. Now, there are several things that she adds to that song. Mm-hmm. She retools the lyric to be, it's her money, mm-hmm. and she's demanding respect. It completely changes the intention of the song. Mm-hmm. Also, she and her sisters added that amazing and iconic R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, that is a lot of what people think of when they think of the song. That mm-hmm. she added.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very good. What are your thoughts, Adi, interpretation-wise?
I was thinking about what you just said about people kind of frowning on it, and I feel like that's a rockism in terms of criticism, the idea that, like, only songs you write yourself,
right.
performed by you, are
right.
real songs
right.
and real music, which is not at all, I think, if your roots are in gospel or jazz or in legacies that are about interpretation,
right.
that's just, like, not the legacy you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we haven't seen a singer, I would say the last one, to be honest, would be the late Whitney Houston, who had the ability to interpret the way Aretha Franklin could, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I Will Always Love You, like, by Dolly Parton, but who knows? Because we all think,
yeah.
like, Whitney Houston, like, made it her own. And I think we have a long list of those for Aretha Franklin. My choice for that is I Say a Little Prayer, which was written by Burt Bacharach, performed by Dionne Warwick, ably.
Yeah.
Sold a million strong
yeah.
on that, okay?
Dionne
and
Warwick's also,
like,
pretty good.
Forever, you'll stay in my heart.
A year later,
yeah.
Aretha Franklin puts it out, and, like, that's it, y'all. Turn out the lights, because it's her song.
Yeah.
And it's so dramatic, you know, that ability to take something and, like, it's not a cover. I don't think I've ever heard Aretha Franklin cover something,
yeah.
even though I have heard her sing other people's
yeah.
songs.
Yeah. And another one that I would mention is The Wait by The Band.
Yes.
Which, so the band is sort of a, how do you even describe them, Stephen? Kind of like an Americana,
kind of shaggy,
type of laid
folk
back
rock.
Folk rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the song
wonderful.
This is the song that you might think of as the Take a Load Off Annie song. And they have a version of it, and it's real laid back, and it's, you know.
And it's great.
And it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
That's the thing. She didn't, it's the same thing I was saying about, there's a really nice Carole King version
yeah.
of
the
Natural
Dionne
Woman.
Song.
Came later, though. But it's not that she took songs that had been mishandled in other hands. It's just that she elevated them in a certain way when she did them herself. Because her version of The Wait, to me, is so much more, it just grinds in this great way mm-hmm. that I love.
Take a load off, Fanny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I also want to mention, you know, she, in addition to this sort of the stuff that I think a lot of people remember from the era of respect and her stuff in the late 60s and the early 70s, she still in the 80s, when I was a teenager, was still cranking out pop records, some of which I think were better than others. I mean, 80s
well,
production.
Well, she had a kind of resurgence. I mean, she stumbled in the 70s and the late 70s. You know, you're not talking about a great Aretha Franklin disco album, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so she didn't quite make it there. But she moved to Clive Davis and Arista Records, I think, and in the 80s. And I, like you, I think, encountered her, like, as a very young kid, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the Aretha Franklin I first met, so to speak. And then later went back and understood like her 60s, the power of her in the 60s. But there are a bunch of us who grew up with her and like George Michael duets.
That's one of the pieces of tape that I brought because I will absolutely stick up for that song. That song is a banger. I want to hear a little bit of that song. The way that chorus goes, the reference to the river was deep, the mountain was high, the valley was low, they're calling back to stuff from the earlier era that she was in. And if you watch the video, there's a bunch of old footage of duets playing behind them in part of the video, including Sonny and Cher, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. There's a real respect for where that song was coming from and what the legacy that it kind of was adding to was.
Yeah, not subtle. Though, they're like, this is what we're doing
exactly,
here.
Exactly. Even though it's so 80s, and I will 100% stick up for that song because they are both great singers.
I really enjoy that 80s victory lap that that she got to do. I mean, and it was like she was banging out big hits. I mean, Freeway of Love, Who's Zoomin' Who.
perfect.
Which, boy, you talk about production. But those songs have this, I referred earlier to that playfulness. They had this kind of zazzy quality to them that felt like she was taking a very, very well-earned victory lap and just really enjoying being like a video star and being like a contemporary hitmaker and not somebody who was preserved in amber in 1968.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think that's something that she was able to do repeatedly over the course of her career. 1998, I remember her singing Nessun Dorma from Puccini's Turandot at the Grammys.
Crazy story.
Like filling in for Pavarotti.
Filling in for Pavarotti, who like this was the three tenors era, and he was going to be on the Grammys, and then he was sick. So sure.
So they just got Aretha Franklin to come and blow the doors off the place.
What a little Nessun Dorma, you know?
Yeah, she might have done him a favor even.
Yeah,
it's like legendary performance.
It's amazing. And I don't think you can talk about her either without saying she also kept having these intersections with history, right?
Yes.
Because she had a very famous performance at, was it the first or the second Obama inauguration?
First,
yeah. She performed at the inauguration for Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
And Jimmy Carter.
Was it the Barack Obama one where she had the hat?
Yes. Oh, yes.
She got to be a meme.
She got to be a meme.
Diva moment. She's like, I don't know what y'all are doing, but I need a hat. And everyone was like, yep, go ahead and do that.
And the thing that I will also say about her as a woman who once spent a lot of time in various singing you know, occupations and hobbies. We sang a couple things of hers when I did a cappella in college, which, if you think about it, is absurd, right? It was a bunch of girls at Oberlin singing, you know. We sang Natural Woman, more like the Carole King version. But we also sang Baby, I Love You, which is this song that kind of wraps around. It has these phrases that it kind of caresses. I have to play a little bit of it, and you'll see what I mean.
I love you, baby, I love you.
That's sexy even at Oberlin. I'm just going to say, honestly, it was fun to sing. It was, and everybody, like I said, it's absurd, and yet she's really fun to emulate, even if you're utterly incompetent at it. She's so, it's fun to live in those phrasings and to try to play around with them. I think she's just, I think she just was an incredible motivator to all kinds of
she invites you to sing along even though you can't match it at all.
That's what I'm trying to say. That's exactly it.
You know, I think I also want to just say that we take for granted now the idea that the roots of R&B are in gospel and that so much of that music borrows from the gospel tradition. And I don't think people acknowledge enough how much of that comes from her early work.
Absolutely.
And the transition that she made. I mean, she was kind of a prodigy in terms of like a teen gospel singer. And finding her voice in pop, she brought so much of the phrasing and the ideas from gospel. And now we all kind of like take that for granted. Like, oh, yeah, that's just a thing. It's like, no, Aretha Franklin got you that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a person who won just like almost a dozen Grammys, right? Like over the course of
more than
her height. Right. And also when it comes to civil rights, when I think of Respect, that's a song which I think groups that were coming out in the 60s and 70s and demanding civil rights could use as an anthem, so to speak. But it wasn't sad, and it wasn't a dirge, and it wasn't a spiritual, you know? It was something that actually was quite joyful in its demands. Mm-hmm. And think about how many songs, like how many pop songs you know are both like urgent, demanding about a kind of activism, but actually are not dour, right? Mm-hmm. Or don't make the listener feel bad. I mean, I can't even deliver that in a speaking voice. Like, it's just that same kind of idea. And she does it in a song that like people want to dance to at weddings. Mm-hmm. Right. It's kind of an incredible thing.
I mean, boy, she came by that gospel prodigy stuff pretty honestly, too.
Yeah.
You know, she was the daughter of C.L. Franklin, you know, a massively influential preacher and singer. And she spent her childhood like being raised by people like Mahalia Jackson.
Right, who came through and sang.
Surrounded by people like Martin Luther King. Everybody's from Martin Luther King to Sam Cooke. To spend her entire life from her childhood to the end of her life just being around that class of people and still finding a way to elevate her surroundings. It is hard to believe that she was able to sustain success and importance and power for a career that spanned 60 years.
Yeah, and it's hard to picture someone doing it again, partly because, I mean, we talked about her as an interpreter. People don't like to do that anymore. She was very private. You know, there were things that she wrestled with, but she didn't really like to speak about them publicly. She did a little when she put out an autobiography. But now we're living in the age where, like, all of these singers spend a lot of their time trying to manipulate and outwit the news cycle about them and their own narratives about them. You know, you can't be an interpreter because we, like, know everything about you and what you're singing about.
Yeah.
And then things you've talked about, like the end of monoculture, you know? Like, we're not all listening to one thing anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that she, again, was a product of a time when that was really routine. It's hard to picture, number one, I don't think we've heard a voice like that since, but number two, it's hard to picture someone even having a career like that now.
Yeah.
I've racked my brain trying to think of, like, who might be a kind of Aretha Franklin or just someone who is talked about as having just, like, such an incredible voice.
Yeah.
But I just think there's so many more limitations now on what we let women do with it, how we think they're supposed to look, which we know she also wrestled with, like how people talked about her looks and her weight. I think that is even more acute now. Her passing is also passing of like a certain kind of artist.
I think that's for sure true. And if you by any chance have not just sat down and listened to her recently, if she's become more icon and idea than actual singer for you, go back and listen to not just the things that are the most famous, but go back to any collection of some of her really good stuff, and you will hear beautiful, romantic songs of longing, and you will hear really hot, lusty songs about good sex. And
I'll put in a plug for something she wrote, which is the song Call Me.
I love you.
apparently she had kind of overheard some people talking in a park, some lovers in a park, saying, I love you and call me. And the song is just so plaintive and sweet and direct. It's all the things that, you know, she could do with such ease.
Find some of those recordings if she's become an icon to you, because she's been a great musician, intersected with history in all kinds of ways, and will obviously be enormously missed. And that brings us to the end of our show. If you want to continue celebrating Aretha Franklin, visit nprmusic.org for some great reading and listening. You've got some good stuff over there, right, Stephen?
Oh, my God. There is an Ann Powers essay you do not want to miss.
Fantastic. Well, you can follow Audie Cornish on Twitter at @NPRAudie. Thanks to both of you guys for being here to talk about Aretha Franklin.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to all of you for listening. We will see you next time. I know we've got to pause.